Hello, Mike.
Hello, John.
I'm John.
And I'm Mike.
And you're listening to
All Yesterday's
Parties.
I feel like it was the exact opposite of the intro to the last episode.
Yeah.
That was crisp. It was beautiful.
It was.
Yeah.
Mm.
Good delivery.
Thank you.
Strong. Anyway, yes, John and I are at King Street again. And once again, we're joined by the lovely third party.
Hello.
It's Emily. She's still here.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Can I ask where the name came from?
All Yesterday's Parties?
Yes.
It came specifically from All Tomorrow's Parties, which was the festival where this whole podcast got started.
Yeah.
I see.
Which was, of course, named after the track by Velvet Underground.
I thought it was going to be more amusing than that, but that's a
nice
answer.
No, it's fine.
That is the dull truth of the matter.
It is very dull truth. And the first episode we recorded was in the chalet at... Where the hell was it?
John, don't make me say it. It was at Prestatyn.
Why is it coming out?
You fucking twat.
it was at the Pontins.
I can see now, Emily, why you're restricted to one pun per performance.
Oh, it's unbelievable. you walked right into that one as well.
I knew where I was going to as well. It was like I saw the steamroller up the
you
street.
You just
like,
had no choice.
I'm going to cross the road anyway.
Of me in my Wile E. Coyote costume. we recorded it in the chalet at the Pontins, and we were joined. Matt Tyra was with us. Alice was with us.
Who's not joined us since?
No. and
Gordon.
Gordon.
Gordon, the visiting alien. And speaking of visiting aliens, yes. You heard that segue coming out in there. At the point of recording, there's been a lot of discussion on social media about the storming of Area 51, which, that's an odd thing.
It is a very odd
thing. I don't think anyone is really certain if it's an actual thing that's going to happen, or just some mad social media meme.
I assumed it was a mad social media meme, but I don't know. Maybe some people are crazy enough.
Maybe they are.
What are they going to benefit? How are they going to benefit?
Freeing the aliens.
There are no aliens.
Oh.
We all know. We all know there are no aliens.
Well,
is it worth the risk of getting shot for the hypothetical aliens? Surely no one thinks that.
I'm willing to bet that there are people out there who think it is worth it. I really am.
And I bet they're tooling up as we speak.
You see, tooling them. It's gathering fellow tools.
Yes. En masse. I would like to see the crowd of people who are ready to do it, because I think I would laugh until the end of days.
Do you reckon?
I think it would be an amazingly ragtag bunch of people who all think they're Steven Seagal when he was in his prime. But are in actual fact Steven Seagal now. Yes.
Well,
there are not enough ponchos in the world.
Well, there's that whole thing that definitely would make me think, okay, a lot of people are taking a massive piss on us when they were talking about doing the Naruto run.
Oh no.
Cause with the bent forward, arms back, because apparently it makes it run faster.
Right.
Yeah, that was clearly a meme thing. But again, there are so many people out there
that are taking this seriously.
Yeah. So just for the record, I think the stance of the AYP podcast is don't try and storm Area 51.
Don't do it.
No.
Even if there are aliens, I mean...
Just leave them be.
Yeah.
Leave them be. Like spiders. They ain't going to hurt you. They just want to be left by themselves.
Yeah. They're just trying to enjoy a coffee break.
Yeah. They're fine. Leave them to it.
The likely thing is, you know, the aliens are probably running things over there.
They're probably the staff now.
Oh, dear. We'll just make things worse if we disrupt them.
Yeah. It'll be an admin nightmare.
Yes, it will.
Human
the
resources.
Paperwork.
Are we writing up paperwork for...
Years.
Yeah.
Decades.
Yeah. Terrifying.
So in their weird spindly writing.
It's
quite
case,
judgmental. You don't know that.
I think maybe it is the case that all HR employees are actual aliens. So don't storm Area 51. Just storm your local HR office.
Yeah, I can go with that one.
Yeah.
I know where my HR office is for a start.
Yeah. It's not protected by a lot of burly American guys with big guns.
There is one machine gun turret.
Easily distracted with
an I just need turret. To go down the other corridor, it's fine.
Okay.
You can take that down. Hack it like it's Bioshock.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Bioshock reference. Always welcome.
I've been replaying it. I love it. It's my favourite game. Ever. Favourite game.
I have not played Bioshock 3.
You mean Bioshock Infinite?
Oh, yes.
It's okay.
I liked it more than Bioshock 2.
Yes. Yeah, I'll go with you on that one. Bioshock 2 was a bit clunky. Mm. Bioshock 3, I liked, but the story was convoluted. I liked the Bioshock Infinite spin-off that took them back to Rapture.
Under
like
the
DLC. Yeah, that was beautiful.
I wanted to. You see, this is the thing, is that the thing I liked most about Bioshock was the setting.
Yes.
Rapture is fabulous.
Love Infinite then, because it's just as beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, I struggled back then with my laptop, but even on sort of the lowest settings, it was still jaw-droppingly beautiful.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
And since you've got the old PS4, you'll have no such worries there. It's probably quite reasonably priced on PS4, actually, these days.
Could well be.
You can get a pack of all of them.
Okay.
So 1, 2, 3, and all the DLCs, and it's like £25.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Oh.
Bargain.
Oh.
And your address is.
So I think we've come to the point where we need to talk about the actual meat and or potatoes of the podcast. So we are loosely speaking going to be talking about one of the first.
I'm very loosely speaking.
Very, very loosely speaking.
Yeah, totally.
Going to be talking
all
about
the beers.
One of the first albums that Emily acquired. So
yes.
Emily, would you kindly tell us about this album?
Oh yes, yes I shall. So the first album I ever acquired, it was bought for me by my parents, was Sgt. Pepper, and I love it. I still don't rate it as my number one Beatles album.
Okay.
But I think as an album, it's pretty stonking.
So which one is number one for you?
I am always torn between Revolver and Rubber Soul.
Okay.
As they started to get a little bit more progressive, a little bit more odd, those two were up there for me. If I could take the best tracks out of both of them and make an album, that would be the pinnacle.
Oh.
But that's cool. The period that I really, really liked.
Hmm.
So, did you say you'd never listened to it before, John, or you re-listened to
it? I had listened to Sgt. Pepper a long time ago. I re-listened last night.
Thoughts?
It's good. The thing that always strikes me about the Beatles is, the thing that's really interesting is when they started to lean more towards just doing stuff in the studio and not really playing live all that much.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can totally understand why they would be sick to the tits of playing to audiences that aren't actually listening to them.
Yeah, just squealing.
The stench of piss must be unbearable.
Oh.
Piss. Yes, it was just piss. Yes.
It was just piss and screaming. There's the episode title. But I can fully appreciate why they just wanted to start playing with things in the studio and not really doing all that much.
Yeah, I guess as they sort of started to push more in one direction.
Yeah.
And as I said, in a more progressive direction as well, it must have been difficult to be playing live and have people being like, yeah, well, can you play, you know, Twist and Shout?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to hold your hand.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God.
That must have been frustrating. I guess any artist has that same thing as they move in a different direction.
But I think, I think the way that went in terms of the Beatles was probably completely unprecedented.
Mm.
And the extent to which it would have been almost impossible to do anything like in public.
Yeah.
To be fair, a lot of what the Beatles did was unprecedented at the time.
Yeah.
Even down to the point of them writing their own music. Because around about the time, most pop artists, and they were very pop artists to begin with.
Yeah.
Had their music written for them.
Yeah.
So that whole modern thing that we have with, oh, they don't even write their own songs, they don't even play their own instruments. No fucker did back in the day.
Yeah.
It's just the Beatles kind of started writing their music and playing their own instruments.
Yeah.
And that is the idea
that
we have now.
Precedent.
It's a proper band.
Mm.
And like we were talking about with Stevie Wonder, funnily enough, there is a lot of variety of style.
Yeah, some of it's shit.
I love the fact that you can have something that's within you without you,
which is my number one favorite Beatles song ever.
Yeah,
I adore it. I used to sit as a teenager with incense on, listening to that, and thinking I was in India. Such a cliche.
it's gonna soak up that image.
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely, with my like decked out sort of. I used to cover my furniture in cutouts from The Enemy.
Yeah.
Oh, mate.
Did you have a bindi?
No. I'd get a henna tattoo whenever I could.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
When your parents went out, did they ever leave you with a baby sitar?
Oh! There it is. You can have that one, John. I'm employing this.
I told you, I'm usually right. It's this, the way forward.
This one pun policy, I like it a lot.
Yeah.
The fact that it can go from that, I mean, the one thing that was quite odd about Within You Without You is the way that they can still be sounding a bit Scouse.
Yeah. Yes, agreed.
But then it goes from that to When I'm 64.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it now. They're actually next to each other.
Yeah.
All of, you've got Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, and then later you've got on Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite, which is also terrible.
I have fond feelings for When I'm 64.
Yeah.
Because of, well, I grew up with Yellow Submarine as a film that I would watch a hell of a lot.
Mm. Mm.
I don't think I can even think about the number of times I watched that film when I was little.
Mm.
Absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And When I'm 64 is one of the tracks in it. And when I think about it, it's an incredibly psychedelic film.
Yes,
really, quite
yes,
an
is.
Odd piece of work.
It's trippy as shit.
It is trippy as absolute shit. And a lot of the tracks, I mean, because it does sit around the reformation of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, mm-hmm. It's a lot of the tracks are from that
Sgt.
album.
Pepper.
So whilst I've not listened to that album myself, I'm not sure if I've ever listened to it all the way through.
That's maybe not a bad thing.
I'm familiar with a lot of the tracks, and not always necessarily the good ones.
Yeah. Yeah,
But any tracks I am familiar with, I immediately get a visual.
Yeah, oh,
such
that's
a, when
nice.
When it's for Lucy and Scarlet Diamonds, mm-hmm. that whole sequence
in
Yellow Submarine is amazing. Eleanor Rigby, was that from Sgt. Pepper?
I can't remember which album that's from.
News.
But I just Eleanor Rigby is one of my favourite Beatles songs, and I think part of that is because of Yellow Submarine.
Yeah,
it's such a peculiar, slightly bleak sequence from early on in the film.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
But it's one of those albums that could probably be cut in half. I mean, I've got the tracks in front of me and I'm like, oh yes, some of them are absolute winners. The reprise of Sgt. Pepper is fantastic. It's brilliant. That leading into A Day in the Life is utterly stunning.
Yeah.
Day in the Life, that is.
Yeah.
That is a remarkable
piece. Yeah, it is. And I always forget that it's on this album.
Mm.
But at the same time, you couldn't really chop it in half because it flows beautifully. Even though it's got its ups and downs, it flows really nicely through as an album.
Yes.
Like an album instead of an album being a compilation of singles. Album that you want to listen to from start to finish in order, and they all lead into each other.
One that has a natural flow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think people don't do. The albums aren't like that
not
anymore.
A great
not
deal.
So much.
No.
Yeah. It tends to be a remarkable thing if someone releases an album that is an album.
I like things to have a through line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we any good examples? Either of you have albums that have done that
My
for you?
Favourite example of that, I think, is Lifted by Bright Eyes.
Mm.
What an album that is.
It feels to me, I love the way it starts off. I've probably said this podcast before.
The beginning of this album is...
The way it starts off with the sound of two people getting into a car and going for a drive,
mm-hmm.
and then the way the first... So the way the actual song kind of seeps into it.
It's like it's playing on the radio, isn't it, in the car?
It's, you can still hear the car driving in the background, and then at one point you can actually hear the woman in the car singing the backing vocal, but like as if she's singing it to herself.
It's incredible.
And as if she doesn't know all the lyrics as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of humming, and then occasional words. Like she'll sing like a line, and then she'll go hum little bits of it.
That's fantastic.
It is.
So like on, that's even taking it to, you know, concept album.
Yeah,
it really is.
It absolutely is.
That album, to me, it feels like, because that ends, and then you've got the sound of somebody walking on gravel, and then at different bits of the album, there's different parts of it where, like, there's somebody opening a door, closing it,
yeah,
and like going from room, it feels like somebody going from room to room in a house.
So you're going on like a full journey.
It feels like it, and that's one album that's just really stuck with me.
Yeah,
and I kind of like how throughout the album there's differences in the recording quality.
Yes,
because there are some that are very crisply recorded, and others that sound like they're just done like a fucking cupboard. One microphone and or beat just, up acoustic.
Yeah, or even just a phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's taking you on kind of a journey through the album, through a location, but also just through the whole idea of making an album.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
There's a lot of levels to it. It is a remarkable piece.
Mm.
And none of the tracks are sort of replaceable or take outable because
it's
all part of that journey.
Exactly.
I've tried in the past to actually take tracks from it and put them onto mixes for people.
And you just can't do it.
And there's like about two tracks you can do that with.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Love Road I Don't Have to Love
mm-hmm.
and Make War are about the only ones you can actually take out and put in.
It's a blessing and a curse, really, that, isn't it?
Yeah, because you want to kind of share stuff with people.
But people probably don't want to sit and do a whole album, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult.
I remember actually the track you put for me on a mixtape, which led me to the album, was You Will...
Oh, You Will, You Will, You Will, You Will.
Yes.
Yes.
You Will.
Will. That's a beautiful... Actually, yeah, that one separates out just about.
Just about.
And I suppose...
Bowl of Oranges.
No, Bowl of Oranges has that weird outro.
Oh, yes, it does.
That goes into Days Gonna
Don't Know What... Yeah, okay.
Which is an amazing track. Well, that long outro out of Bowl of Oranges is fucking sinister.
That's right. I made my own MP3 where I cut all that out at the end. Yeah.
So the one other you can use is Let's Not Shit Ourselves.
Which is one of my favourite song titles.
Episode title.
But it's such a long track, though, as well. And it's got a lot of outro.
Yeah.
So. But I think another one I can think of, which may or may not count,
mm-hmm.
is Hazard of Love by the Decemberists.
Ooh.
I have not listened to this.
It's glorious.
Yes.
But it's the reason I'm wondering if it counts or not is because it's very much set up as a rock opera.
Oh, okay.
So it runs from start to finish with a story. And there's a couple of standout tracks, like there are with any kind of musical.
Yes.
Yeah.
Every musical, there's one big tune.
Yeah.
You know, something like Defying Gravity from Wicked or something like that.
Yeah.
So, Memories from Cats.
Yeah.
One big tune that every motherfucker
Speaking of which, I'm just taking one side point off. Have we seen the Cats trailer?
Yes. God, I have seen the Cats trailer.
I have seen people...
The horror.
I've
never seen anything so horrific in my entire life.
It's so Uncanny Valley, isn't
it? It is so Uncanny Valley. I thought... Did you watch Mowgli on Netflix?
I saw stills from it. It looked horrific.
Christian Bale as Bagheera, so that's just basically like Christian Bale's face, but on a panther. That was strange. This takes it to a whole new level of strange. And they move weird.
Yes.
And then they're really small. They don't seem to have a consistent size at all in the trailer. Like, one time they're dancing on a table, they are no bigger than those, like, cans of beer. And then other times they're, like, railing against railings.
Yeah.
That's the episode title.
I may have just realised why railings are called railings now.
Yeah.
To keep out people who are protesting against your very existence.
Yeah. Oh, mind's blown. Mind's blown.
Wow.
Let's not go and see Cats.
No. I did also see someone took that trailer And you know the trailer to Us, with that really creepy version of I Got Five on it?
Yes.
They took that version of I Got Five in it and put it over the trailer for Cats.
And you had nightmares.
It works so perfectly.
Oh, my goodness.
Seek it out. It's amazing.
I'm going to.
But apparently both trailers are made by the same person as well.
Really?
Yeah. Which just goes to show, you know, no matter how good you are at making trailers, you can't polish a turd.
No, you cannot.
Both trailers are actually very well done. The editing and the compiling... Smooth as you like.
All fine, but the film is just too weird.
It looks horrible.
And how did they get the cast? I don't understand. It's got a fairly decent cast.
It's just an anagram of cats.
Oh, one pun more for you.
It was barely even a pun. That was just weak sauce.
It's just... It baffles me. All of these amazing... Judi Dench is in it. Isn't Ian McKellen in it?
Yes.
Why? Why have they... Why?
But then also Idris Elba.
Oh,
what?
Idris Elba's in it, yeah. And Taylor Swift.
Well, I don't really care too much about T-Swift.
Slightly bizarre.
Really bizarre. And someone else. Oh, I mean, plenty of other people.
Bill Oddie.
Yes.
James Corden.
James Corden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking hell.
Yeah.
Do you know?
And, Rebel Wilson.
Oh, I don't really like that.
Yeah.
She gets on my nerves a
but,
bit.
But she's another name.
Yes, yeah. She's huge. Yeah. I don't understand. Did they not know what it was going to look like before they signed up to do it, potentially?
Possibly. Maybe. Can you imagine them?
Jennifer Hudson's in it as well. Yeah.
Imagine having done the work and then... Because they'll have all been like green screened and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
So imagine they go, right, trailer's coming out tomorrow, you guys. Stoked.
And then they say, what the fuck?
Well, just speaking of James Corden, I remember being in the cinema for something and seeing the trailer for when they did that Peter Rabbit film.
Ugh.
Yes.
And as soon as Peter Rabbit spoke and it was
James Corden,
I heard at least two people in the cinema go, fucking hell.
Fair.
Yeah,
it's
really fair.
Cinema audiences. I went to a screening of Alien.
Was this the one you went to?
The Potter's Museum.
Yeah.
Yeah. This looks really good. Yeah, I really wanted to see Alien at a cinema.
They had live action Xenomorphs.
They had people in Xenomorph costumes, which was slightly ruined by a pair of black Converse each.
Brilliant.
Other than that, fine. So they'd kind of been wandering around before we went in to see the film. Guess what they did with Alien?
What did they do with Alien, John?
They had an interval.
I love it.
And the interval was after the dinner scene. So it was sprang interval. And they just paused the DVD.
Oh, so there wasn't even like a nice little... Now was our interval. Have a little break. Curtain.
No,
they just pressed pause.
They pressed pause, and there was a voice at the back going, "Come back in 20 minutes."
the only time I've seen a film where there's been an interval was when I was living in Bangor, and I went to see Austin Powers, the first Austin Powers.
Why did that have an interval?
I don't know. But the thing was, it came up with like a big interval screen. But it was such a retro thing of kind of interval.
You thought it was part of the film?
I thought it was part of the film. I was pissing myself laughing. Until I looked around and saw people getting up, and then the house lights came up like, oh, fuck me. North Wales is still in the fucking 60s.
I mean, that's not even a long film.
No.
It's just an average length American comedy.
This is it. Alien's not that long.
Was it
a director's cut or just normal?
Even the director's cut of Alien isn't that long.
I fell asleep at the director's cut.
It was the normal cut.
It didn't start until 11 at night.
Yeah, it was the normal cut. We came back, and instead of it being 20 minutes, it was about half an hour.
Oh, no.
Finally, people started coming back, and everyone sat down, the lights went down, they pressed play on the DVD, and it's the scene where they're looking for the alien with the net and the cattle prod.
Yes.
And then Brett goes off to look for Jonesy.
Yeah.
And in the middle of that scene, where there is almost no speaking, all just the sound of the hold that he's in.
Yeah.
and somebody farted. And not only did he fart, everyone else in the auditorium gave him a round of applause.
What? Oh God, that's like
he got a round of applause. Was like,
was
that's
it like a when particularly impressive one?
I mean, it did sound like a creaking door.
Amazing.
It was a little bit like unzipping a tent.
It was just adding to the ambiance.
Yeah, this is it. Oh no, do you know what this film is missing? We've segued so hard.
At some point,
we were talking about things having standout
tracks. About a month ago, I was
Hazards
of
Love.
Yes, standout tracks.
Because, the Rake song.
Yes.
Is amazing. A wonderful song about a man who was living the bachelor life, got married, had some kids, his wife died, and then he decided, I don't want these kids anymore, and started to kill them.
What?
Absolutely storming piece of music.
Oh my goodness me.
It is a remarkable song. And he's kind of the villain of the piece. Well, one of the villains. And so that kind of...
Understandably.
Yes.
But the whole thing works so beautifully. And there's a lot of recurring themes throughout it. So kind of musical themes.
Motifs.
Yes, John.
Good word.
Thank you. And there's four tracks called The Hazards of Dwarf. And each one is a very much a different tune.
Mm-hmm.
Hazard Love Part 3, The Revenge, is one of my favourites.
Yeah.
Where the murdered children of the Rake come back to drag him to hell.
Oh my goodness.
Absolutely
beautiful. It sounds
beautiful.
Batty.
It is.
Bonkers. It's basically about a woman who falls in love with a man / forest spirit who can take the form of a fawn, but is also a man who impregnates her, and he wants to be with her, but his mother, who is the
forest queen?
The queen of the forest.
Yeah.
She won't let him, but she allows him to have one night with her, at which point she is kidnapped by the Rake and taken away across a wild river. He, the fawn spirit
fawn
person,
man
follows, makes a pact with the river that it allows him to cross.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be safe.
Mm-hmm.
On the condition that if he comes back again, he will die.
Oh no!
He saves her from the Rake, although with the deus ex machina of the children coming back and dragging him to hell.
Okay.
For some reason, duh, he forgets about his pact with the river. They go over the river. They both perish in the waves while singing the heartbreaking Hazard Love Part 4.
Oh yeah.
Which is one of the saddest pieces of music I've ever heard in my life.
This sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
But yes, it's a perfect folk rock opera.
Yeah.
And actually knowing the plot beforehand helps you appreciate the music.
How beautiful it is.
With a lot of music. I mean, I went to see Les Miserables.
Yeah, I mean, I love it, so I'm biased.
Yeah, but if I hadn't known what the plot was beforehand, I probably wouldn't have had a bloody clue.
No.
So knowing the plot beforehand helped a hell of a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, that's another great one with some good standout tunes as well.
What name is?
Mm.
Yes, but I can't watch it. I blub every single time. Even the terrible movie version, I blubbed at that too.
Yeah.
It's awful. I grew up, my parents loved it, so I'd always known the music.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I finally understood the story, I guess I did that backwards.
Yes.
So I knew the songs anyway, and then found out the story, which then added a new element to the songs, and then I was a wreck.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great one.
So any other albums that work best? Well, listen, start to finish. As an album.
I'm sure there are lots.
I know, I can't think of any off the top of my head.
I mean, this is one of those things where, if we were just talking about it down the top, we could probably list several.
I mean, there's lots of albums that I absolutely love as whole pieces of work that, like things like Kathy Davies' Something Ilk is one. Shea Waters' Jet Plane and Oxbow.
I'd say a lot of the mid-period of Nine Inch Nails works best as you start to finish. I do think Downward Spiral is at its absolute best for listening to it as an album. Because you really get the feel for the peak and the very, very deep trough.
A lot of that I'd say Tool is the same. I'm listening to Tool, do that as a whole album and really go on that journey. You won't like it, and by the end of it you will be devastated, but they are perfect to sit in isolation and just listen to that as an hour's worth.
Yeah, it's very deep, dark, involved music.
Yeah, very much so.
Songs for the Deaf.
I suppose.
I mean, it is one of those odd sort of single-laden albums, but I think that's only because all the singles came later.
I think it fits as a midpoint where it can be enjoyed very well as either.
Yes.
Mm.
They were quite mixtape friendly in the way that even though there was that recurrent sort of radio tuning theme.
All death metal, all the time. All the time.
Yeah. It's another devil to put on any kind of mixtape because you always end up with that at the end.
But what was quite nice is the way that sometimes it would end with like the radio static.
Mm.
And that was actually quite a cool segue to something completely different.
Yeah, true.
Which true. I quite liked.
That's a good album.
I like having, whenever I'm making any kind of mix, I like having a cheeky little segue song.
Mm. Yeah?
I find that I Am Sad So Very, Very Sad by Crash and the Boys from the Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe soundtrack. Is it versus the Universe versus the World?
World, I think.
It is versus the World, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Maybe.
It's been too long. Yeah. Anyway, Crushing the Boys, I'm Sad So Very, Very Sad. It's a beautiful little one for just transitioning from one style of music to another. Just the way that they do the like 1 second long tune.
Yeah.
And then follow up with, thank you. This one is called We Hate You, Please Die. And then you follow it with whatever song you want.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Similar to how the Reservoir Dogs soundtrack is, if you've ever listened to that.
Oh, because it's interspersed with clips, isn't it?
Not only clips, so most of the Tarantino soundtracks are clips in between, but the Reservoir Dogs is...
Cabellies?
Yeah, the radio show. So it's him announcing what is going to happen next. So that's really
super sounds of the 70s.
That's exactly it, yeah.
I like
And Natural Born Killers soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back onto Trent Reznor there. Mm-hmm. Now that is a wild soundtrack.
Fantastic soundtrack.
Because that is all kinds of chopped up shit from the film.
Yeah.
And some of the songs kind of chopped together.
Yeah.
It's a really weird fucking soundtrack. Very, very good.
It says.
I'm thinking about mixtaping. I did discover one thing which I absolutely adore. There's a band called The Doe.
Yes, we did an episode on The Doe.
I thought
half
we had.
An episode on The Doe.
I thought we
Both
had.
Both Ways Open Jaws.
Yes. Well, there's a song from their first album called Queen.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends with this sort of na, 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 na. And then it goes into this instrumental bit, which is a separate track. But I discovered that the live version of Underground by Ben Folds 5... starts with this on the piano, which is very hard for me to impersonate.
You did a really good job.
Yeah. Yes. You go good, Dom.
Thank you very much. And it's in the same key as the last note on Queen.com.
Yes, Queen.
So it goes na 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 na. And it fits perfectly, so I keep trying to fit that into mixtapes.
That's why those two tracks are on every single one of your mixtapes. Yeah, well done.
Thank you. For anyone wondering who's been on the receiving end.
These don't fit our situation at all. No, but they work really nicely.
You've ruined our wedding.
I think we're done.
Yes. So thank you, Emily, for being with us for these.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
We hope you return. And from Mike and I, thank you for listening.
Gary.
We really appreciate you sitting there in your car.
In your pants.
In the rain.
Why are you driving in your pants, Gary? Are you going for scissors?
You should get a car instead.
Hit the sting, John.
Yeah, sting.
Hit the sting, John.
End credits.
Hit the end credits, John.
Thank you. You have been listening to all yesterday's parties, haven't you?
Yes, yes you have.
Yeah. The music is by Attack of the Vapors, and the podcast is hosted by Audio Boom.